are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
And their judgmental elitism grew then the greater within them, and they also took visible form. But because of their mood and the malice that burned within them, that form was dark and terrible. And so they descended upon the podcast listening public in power and majesty greater than that of any other heavy metal podcast, as a mountain that wades in the sea and has its head above the clouds and is clad in ice and is crowned with smoke and fire. All this to say, welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast, where heavy metal is the law and court is always in session. I'm your host, Dual Guest, joined as always by Richard Donahue.
Greetings.
And the triumphant return of Peter Bog.
Eternal hails.
Yes, indeed. On this episode on the podcast, we have the triumphant return of not only Peter Bog, but also Mordor Metal Monthly, with a spotlight on Wind Rose. We'll also be giving reviews for the latest release from Wayfarer, as well as Firstborn. And we're also going to be discussing a little bit about cheese and heavy metal, and when is it too much? All this and more. And maybe some Arnold Schwarzenegger-themed tomfoolery on the Fundamentalist Podcast. So welcome in, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining, especially to you, Bog, for making your return to the pod. How goes it, friends?
I'm doing all right, Joel. How about you? I think that you're probably the coldest of the three of us, although I've got to admit I don't spend a lot of time in Massachusetts.
Absolutely.
Pretty chilly. It was 32 degrees last night in New Hampshire at the Goat Horse Show. So
Yeah, it's cold. It actually gets way colder in the States and places like Massachusetts than it does here in Prague, even at its worst. So you probably have a shittier winter in store for you than I do. Enough weather talk. Richard, you just recently went to a show, correct? Tell us a little bit about that before we delve into the festivities.
So this is actually my first show since me and the family went to Sacramentum back in August. So it was a Goat Whore who's touring for their new record with Withered, Blackened Doom from Atlanta, and a Spider, who are a horror punk band from Hell's Headbangers. So it was the first time at this venue. It was called the Angel City Tavern or some shit like that, but kind of a cool vibe. They had like rock memorabilia, records, guitars all over the walls. They had a bunch of Kiss shit. Beers were cheap, $5 a pop for Corona. Sound was pretty good, but at least it's kind of muddied in the front. That's really any venue. But Spider kicked things off, and just kind of horror, punk, metal, three-piece, a lot of hate, a lot of screaming and shit. Those, they were very enjoyable. And next up was Withered, who this is my first time seeing them since I saw them at the Hangar with Goat Horror as well, and a 3 Inch of Blood. So I've been quite a while since I'd seen them. Played a lot off the newest record of Valor, which is one of my favorite records of 2021. And a couple oldies, which I haven't played a lot. And I was actually able to get all the band members to sign their last four releases. Killer. Actually, Mike, their vocalist guitarist, actually remembered me from that show, actually. So we actually started chatting about Candlemass. You know, they opened Candlemass recently. That's apparently a big bucket list thing for them, called Sadistic Intent. So good times were had for sure. And I believe this is my 12th time seeing Goat Horror, and they fucking brought the goods as they usually do. So they took out all the pre-Haunting Curse era songs, which I kind of appreciate. So I do love Sky Inferno, but I've heard that song like 5 million fucking times at this point. So I was getting a little old. And probably my favorite song they played was the final song off of the latest record, which is titled "And I Was Delivered from the Wounds of Perdition." Overall killer set. Also got the sign, the copy of the new record booklet, so all four members. So all in all, great evening.
I'm calling bullshit. There's absolutely no way you've only seen Goat Horror 12 times.
12 or 13 is one of them. So, because I first saw them, they were actually my first live, like, national metal band to see at the Palladium for the Sounds Underground 2007. They were my first band I saw. So, it's 12 or 13 is one of them. So, it was my first time in New Hampshire seeing them. Because I've seen them in Atlanta, Massachusetts, Mississippi, New Orleans, obviously. That's it, actually. My first time in New Hampshire, though, seeing them. So
maybe I'm just spoiled for Goat Horror, but between Pensacola, Atlanta, Birmingham, Mobile, Gulfport, Biloxi, New Orleans, Las Vegas, like, I've seen Goat Horror anywhere and seemingly everywhere over 20 times. By far my most seen live band.
Yeah, no, you've seen it more than me. I'm inching up there, but not quite.
Gotcha.
Immolation coming a close second for me.
I also have two shows that I recently attended. I'll start with the most recent. I got to see Laster, which was this three-piece, shall I say, psychedelic surf rock black metal, atmospheric black metal at that. And they wore these funky-ass masks, three-piece band. I'm not going to say I liked it, but I wasn't dissatisfied with it, at least in a live sense. I'll have to listen to the record and see what that is like. I would say I was intrigued by them live, but they were simply the opener. I was there for the main event, which was Psy. Psy being the legendary black metal band from Japan. They did not play too terribly much of old stuff. Honestly, there was a lot of new stuff and there was some classic tracks in there. But at the end of the day, it really didn't matter what they played. I was just there to actually get to experience them because it'll probably be my only time ever getting to see them. And yeah, they were fucking really phenomenal.
Japan.
They were phenomenal. And my biggest disappointment, honestly, was they brought one fucking t-shirt, a logo t-shirt. That was their merch. The merch That's stand at the back was one fucking t-shirt. And Laster had like a whole fucking desk with like patches, CDs, different shirts designs. Like, what the fuck? Other than that, cool show. I also attended Prague Death Mass, which is an annual death metal festival here in the Czech Republic. Each day, it's like on a Friday and Saturday, the show will start at 2 and goes till 2 a.m. each day. I also figured out I can't fucking hang. I showed up at 6 p.m. each day and left at midnight each day. So I actually missed Mortuary Drape because I wasn't hanging around till 1:45 in the morning to see a band start playing. I'm just not. Sorry. However, the main band I was going there to see was Diocletian, and surprise, they fuck. Probably the only time I ever get to see Diocletian. They reformed just for this show, I believe. Wow, so yeah, it was really great to see them. More discernible than I would have expected, especially coming off, like, you know, you listen to records like Gesundheit, something like that, and you expect it to just be kind of like this wall of noise, kind of muddy, but they were actually pretty discernible, almost disappointingly so. I just kind of wanted to be bludgeoned by like a wall of noise. And in a way I was, but it was much more of a, you could actually hear some of the rhythms and melodies going on there. And I use the term melody in a very loose
melodies.
Yeah. Yes. I also got to see Misotheist, who were fantastic. Hierophant, who was also fantastic. Bolzer, who was, in all honesty, kind of boring. Shout out to Misotheist as well for having a foreshadowing a dwarf on stage. Perhaps this is going to come off as offensive, so maybe I shouldn't even say it at all, but when you have four hulking dudes with long hair and corpse paint up on stage looking tough and evil, and then Peter Dinklage's brother comes out in the same outfit and corpse paint, yeah, take from that what you will. I think I should leave it at that.
Well, I appreciate the political correctness in calling them a dwarf, but maybe we should skew little person considering the band we're highlighting on Mortar Metal Monthly. That term dwarf is going to be thrown around in a much different context very shortly.
Well, this guy was not digging a hole, so we could differentiate in that sense. He is a dwarf, but he was not digging a hole, which differentiates him from the dwarves that are digging a hole that we will be discussing later. I also saw this Czech band called 13th Century in Czech. I'm going to put it to you that way. I was going to try to say it in Czech, but I can't do it. It's like this gothic 80s vampire themed band. Apparently, they're very, very fucking popular here. They're actually kind of cool. Chesty Shdiesty or some shit, I think it's called. I butchered that. But that was like all the bands that I saw that I thought were worthy of speaking of. I missed the bands in the early afternoon because, like, one on Friday, I'm still at fucking work for 3 hours when the shit started. And then I missed Dead Congregation because they were at 1:30 a.m. And I missed Mortuary Drape because they were at 1:45 a.m. No. Anyway, I had a great time.
I also missed Dead Congregation at Metal Threat. They played the Friday night and I was spent from traveling all day and shit. So I just skipped out on them. So
without the aid of party favors, your boy isn't going to hang. Unless it's like if it's Emperor at 1:30, okay. Mortuary Drape, I'm sorry. I'm sure you're killing. Let's move on to what we've been listening to, Bach.
This is kind of well-treaded territory for me at this point, for anybody who's listened back. But I've been on a big symbolic kick from Death. I don't know why. I like to listen to that album when I fly for some reason. And so it's kind of just been steady in my rotation ever since I got back from California. I went back and listened to The Dream Calls for Blood from Death Angel. I'm not really sure where that one came from. I think that I was just thinking back to that absolute banger, The Caster of Shame, one day, and I popped that one on and remembered how many great other tracks there are, specifically Son of the Morning. And then there's one in there called Detonate, which is also very fucking cool. I would consider it to probably be Death Angel's best record. It's definitely from their sort of newer era. I think it's from 2013, but worth going back and taking a look at if you've never heard it before. And then I know at one point I said that I was going to try and get into power metal, and I absolutely failed. But I have been, you know, into our Mortar Metal Monthly act, Wind Rose, as Duel mentioned earlier. And so that led me back to probably my only other well-loved power metal band, which is Dragon Force. And I listened to The Inhuman Rampage from 2005, which features probably their kind of breakthrough song, Through the Fire and the Flames. But a couple other ones that are fun is Revolution Death Squad, Flame of the Youth. And then just, you know, I sort of skipped around a little bit. I listened to that song. I listened to that record called The Devil Put Dinosaurs Here, which is
Alice in Chains'
newest record. But it's one of the William Duvall Alice in Chains records. It's pretty fucking heavy, man. Like, it's actually cool. I think that it was criticized when I first heard it for sounding like too much of an imitation of the old material. I think that when Black Gives Way to Blue came out, they had a little bit of a different awesome feel record. To it. But I would recommend it. You're not going to suffer through it is all I can say. Like, how you feel about that sound versus the Lane Years is kind of up each to their own, but there's good songwriting there. And then, I also was kind of vaguely aware that, the Stone Temple Pilots are still a band and they have a different singer. So they put out a record, I think it was in 2020, and I don't even remember what it's called, but I went back and listened to that, and it's a lot of acoustic stuff and it sound like the band that I expected them to be. But I also can kind of appreciate that if they want to continue with a completely different singer, that they're trying to change the sound up a little bit. So maybe that would be a smart move. And also, when you need to call a band quits and when they become a little bit too much of a pastiche act is something that we'll discuss a little bit more, I think, as we get into some of our other topics. But what have you been listening to, Duel?
Well, going back to your thing about STP, Stone Temple Pilots, correct me if I'm wrong, but they got snake bit twice because their original vocalist Scott Weiland died. And did they not replace him with Chester Bennington?
Who also died, yes, ironically.
Who was playing live with them. And I think they even had plans to record a record with them before
they did, actually. They did.
They did record a record with him, or they?
No, they had plans to do it, yes. But then.
So unfortunately,
actually, that sounds fucking interesting. I would have been curious to see what that Chester Bennington Stone Temple Pilots record would have been like. I didn't know about that though, so that's good information.
Yeah, that would have been interesting for sure. It's kind of like one of those big what ifs, kind of like Corey Taylor in Anthrax.
I never heard that rumor, but
no.
Was it Anthrax, or maybe it was even STP? He auditioned for a really big band that had a opening. I thought it was Anthrax. They told him no, but he was like 1B. He just lost out.
Well, Kerry King's solo band start up soon, so he could take that shit over.
Oh, God.
Hail the ships there.
Well, they have their first show scheduled, I think, for April of next year. So, I mean, that lineup has obviously got to be solidified. So we'll see. What I've been listening to, I started listening to this band called Beastmaker at the behest of one of my friends. They are a classic doom metal band. Their albums Lusus Naturae and Forever with the Devil from 2016 and 2019, respectively, are some really fun pieces of doom metal. Very, very catchy. They remind me a little bit of Brimstone Coven, if all of you diehard listeners will remember me talking about them from way back in the day, like when this podcast first started. If that's kind of sounds like something that you would enjoy, I highly recommend you check them out. Beast Maker. Sticking in the doom metal theme, I got my wife actually into this band. They're called Margarita Witch Cult. They had put out a few singles earlier this year. They finally put out their first album, which is self-titled. Really, really fun doom metal going on here. Tracks like Diabolical. Fun doom metal. Diabolical Influence, Sacrifice, and Theme from Cyclops. Really fun shit. Also not metal, but I've been listening to a lot of Lebanon Hanover, and it's really fucking cool. And I was getting my wife also into Wayfair, and so she's gone through their entire discography and she was a big fan of it. And I told her that, hey, they have another band too, which reminded me I need to go back and listen to Tales of Other Time again from Stormkeep. And I fucking did. And tracks like The Seer and The Citadel hit just as hard as they did 2 years ago when this record came out. Obviously, once this album cycle is concluded from Wayfair, I imagine the focus will once again return to Stormkeep. And hopefully, we'll be getting a new Stormkeep record next year, along with a new Black Dahlia murder record. That's neither here nor there. Richard, what have you been listening to?
Well, I've actually, for a while, I've wanted to do it. I go back to Insomnium from Finland there, Across the Dark record from 2009. And I got to say, the record still really holds up. Like, the records prior to that are very good as well. But this, to me, was the one that kind of solidified their sound with the opening track, you know, Down with the Sun, Where the Last Wave Broke, one of their catchiest songs, and A Lay of Autumn. Very much that kind of sad boy melodic death metal, almost a little bit of Opeth in there, especially songs like the aforementioned Lay of Autumn and The Harrowing Years. It's really good shit if you're into that style. Then kind of amping myself up to the volume to see My Dying Bride next year at Maryland Death Fest. So incredibly fucking stoked. So I went back to their Songs of Darkness and Words of Light album, and still one of their best records. And top three easily. Songs like Wreckage of My Flesh, Catherine Blake, My One Silence is still just je ne sais quoi, fucking high marks in that genre, and their catalog as a whole. And on the cross side of that, they've kind of explored more grindcore recently, you know, Terrorize, Repulsion, which I already know. But this band, Impetigo, they're a grindcore band from old school death grind band from Chicago.
Impetigo?
Impetigo, but I guess Impetigo. Yeah, that band. But anyways, the vocals like almost sound like Mike Patton of Faith No More, but like it's death grind shit. It's the vocals are great. I fucking love it. And the song title is just crazy grindcore shit, like Red Wigglers, Who's Fucking Who, Dear Uncle Creepy, and probably my favorite off the whole record, which is a mouthful. Let me pull it up right quick. Bitch, Death, Teenager, Mucus Monster from Hell. But if you're in those crazy fucking grindcore with like Mike Pat, like growls and screams or else in between, definitely worth a listen if you're into that kind of crazy psycho shit.
But I have definitely seen the Toxic Avenger.
Oh, well, I mean, they broke up like 91, 92. They did a reform in the early 2000s for like a show or two and done.
All right. That concludes what we've been listening to. So let's get into the main event of this episode of the Fundamentalist Podcast, beginning with the latest single after a long hiatus from Austrian Death Machine called No Pain, No Gain. Now, those of you who like to keep receipts, shall we say, will remember that Tim Lambesis got into some, shall we say, hot water a couple years ago, served his time like a good little boy, and now he's back out on the scene delivering the cleans and the chugs in not only his JC-themed band, As I Lay Dying, but his Arnold Schwarzenegger-themed band, which is an inherently cooler concept, in my opinion.
Definitely.
They're back, pumping iron and buying meat. If their latest music video is any indication. Bog, you suggested we cover this band. Obviously, this band is nearer and dearer to your heart either mine or Richard's. Interested to get your thoughts on it.
I didn't select this because I love them. It was mostly like, why the fuck is this, of all things, back? I mean, I could name on, 10 fingers and 10 toes bands that I would have loved to have seen revived, and Austrian Death Machine would not have been any of them. I did see this band, and so they're kind of vivid in my mind because I saw them play in between the Black Dahlia Murder and Children of Bodom in Bodom's headlining tour. I think it was back in 2009. It was like an early date that I went on like with my wife as I took her to go see Bodom. And I just remember that pretty much like half of the mosh pit was just like standing in the middle giving these guys the middle finger. And so at the time, we thought that this was super pejorative. It was definitely jeering at metal concept. They came out with the Cookie Monster shit and sprayed milk into the crowd. It was just like, what the fuck is this?
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, it was bizarre. And, you know, the idea of them actually embracing the Cookie Monster thing is weird to me because people use the Cookie Monster descriptor to describe harsh and guttural vocals in a very negative way. And so I don't know, the whole thing was just, when I saw this pop up on YouTube, I was like, you gotta be kidding me, dude. Like, the fact that he's touring with As I Lay Dying, or what the fuck is his other band?
As I Lay Dying.
Yeah.
Every, you know, the, like, I, you know, he's going to revive all his projects. He's probably going to start a new one, you know, something about his time in prison, probably, it seems.
He's there to rescue them as they lay dying, sir. He picks them up off the mat.
Anywho, this is kind of what I remember it. It's basically like coarse grindcore. You said chugga chugga affectionately there.
So much chugga, too much chugga, in fact.
And
I don't think he said it affectionately, though.
I don't like to talk about music videos too much, but I think with a gimmick band like this, which, if y'all don't know, Austrian Death Machine, based after basically Arnold Schwarzenegger, initially as his sort of acting roles, you know, I think their big single before Tim went to prison was Get to the Choppa.
Yes.
So now they're back with a song that's obviously based after Arnie's weightlifting career. No pain, no gain.
Mr. It was probably Olympia, featured
them. Lifting weights, and as Duel said, going through the grocery store and buying nothing but meat, which I have a funny little note here as I went back and watched that music video, and I said, why is it only chicken? Did Napalm Records not pony up enough money for them to actually buy real T-bones for them to go ahead and eat in the music video? It was a little bit bizarre, because usually those big gym swollen dude bros like to skew towards red meat. So anyways,
I don't know, bro. Chicken and rice is like the meal for the power lifters.
Yes, definitely.
Okay,
I didn't love this single. It's straight out of 2009. The metalcore chugs intermixed in with the clean vocals, and then the quote unquote harsh vocals that are a little over the top, but like on purpose, because it fits like the elements, the theme. This band was always a cooler idea in the imagination than it ever was in execution. Because honestly, an Arnold Schwarzenegger themed metal band, when you think about all his action movies and everything, could have been fucking amazing. But they don't really do enough with it, honestly. And so this band is like a great example of what could have been. Like, I was hoping that this return would have been something cool, that maybe they finally made good on the concept. But no. The music video is funny, though.
Yeah, the music video is funny. I actually remember reading about this project. It was like Revolver, like 2009, 2010. And now 13 years later, this is still a thing. Like, what the fuck, man? But it's not bad. It's passable metalcore. I think the whole like clean vocals being kind of buries a little. If you're going to do the metalcore, go full Killswitch. The full sugary chorus. Don't do this like lame half-ass attempt. I just fucking go balls to wall with it. But it's not my cup of tea, and it's there.
Yeah, it's not heavy enough to actually be death metal, and it's not metalcore enough to actually be metalcore. I'm not sure it actually knows what it wants to be. There's not enough Arnold Schwarzenegger themes or even like references in it to make it even still an Arnold band. Like, I don't know what this band wants to be. Maybe a paycheck, I guess.
As I said, fucking too, I joke. Mean, is this about Arnold back when he was a bodybuilder? I don't know if no pain, no gain was something he said. It's certainly something that I've heard from people who are in the gym, and it's all about pain being temporary. It's basically impact font at, you know, 500, you know, points on the front of a t-shirt that some guy cut the side out, you know, and he's at the gym wearing. Do you know what I mean? This is that t-shirt personified in a song, basically.
I feel people that like August Burns Red and weak shit like that was just cream the pants over this stuff. And more power to you. You can have all of it. I want nothing to fucking do with this. Thumbs down.
Yeah, I'm also giving it a thumbs down, but in some ways I say they have the last laugh, considering that we're reviewing this. So
yeah, I guess if I had to say, I guess I would also say thumbs down too, just because I'm a little disappointed in the execution of the concept. This should be so much cooler. It really should.
Embrace the cheese. Yeah. Do this. You can have 110% in. You can't go halfsies. Full in.
Like, I have so much more time and patience, I think, for projects like these than maybe either one of you do, but they're just still not hitting the mark for me. Not yet, anyway. Maybe one day they'll get there, but that day is not today. Let's move on now to our first full-length album review. Let's start off with Firstborn, shall we?
Yeah.
Firstborn is the new band, the new darling of Chris Adler, formerly of Lamb of God, and James Lomenzo formerly of Megadeth and what, Whitesnake and White Lion?
White Lion, not Whitesnake. Different bands, bro.
Okay, so White Lion. I read apparently
he played with Black Label Society for a number of
years
as well. Yes, he did.
He has quite a resume when it comes to the world of heavy metal, and obviously Chris Adler's work with Lamb of God on all their classic records like As the Palaces Burn and Ashes of the Wake speaks for itself. Now, they're back with a new project, and this does not sound like classic Lamb of God, shall we say. For anybody who listened to the Fundamentalist podcast last year, we talked a lot about Firstborn's first couple of singles. I'm not sure it would be unfair to say that they were the podcast punching bag, but maybe they were the podcast punching bag for a little while. Good news, this record, big improvement in my opinion. So it's actually the exact same lineup as before. I thought maybe the vocalist had changed just because the performance is so much better than some of those singles like Cut the Strings and Sacred Lights and Save Myself and Soul Control.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much everything you could cut, you could go down the list. Morningstar, The Bidding. This is like night and day. 180 degrees, the opposite direction, in the direction of quality. This reminds me a lot of like a football coach in his first year where it's showing improvements, but it's essentially proof of concept. Like, this is where we're going. We're not there yet, but this is a hint of what is to come. And in that sense, I think the record is a success. So, Richard, give us your thoughts on Gods of Fire, this first full length from Firstborn.
Well, the first time I listened to it after four songs, I was just fucking done with it completely. I listened to Exhumed or something good because I thought it was fucking pure dog shit. But then, you know, I went back to it and, you know, because I like to give things a fair shake, and realized it's not as bad as I thought it was, though there are some glaring things that I don't like a lot, like the plasticky ass drums are annoying as fuck. The vocal filters on like every other song, which add nothing to it, are annoying as shit. And the over-singing, like he tries different things in different songs, but it doesn't really do much for me, at least. But there's some good shit on here, though. I thought the title track was pretty fucking good. You know, it knows it wants to do. I feel like a lot of these songs try these different things that doesn't necessarily work. Like the song Followers is like it's industrial shit, which is 2000s as fuck. And then you have a song like One of a Kind, which is like some almost like pop country, late 80s, early 90s hair metal thing going on.
It's like the last of Sammy Hagar era Van Halen ripoff.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. It's just really weird. And ironically, in my opinion, the bad things, this drill is, in my opinion, the best thing on the fucking record because there's no over singing. And that, to me, is probably the worst thing about this record is I think the guitar player, whoever it is, it does a phenomenal job. It's just wasting on this generic ass kind of meandering tunes.
I think that one of the things that we always talked about is that Firstborn is fundamentally a pastiche act. And I said that this band exists so that way they can get some festival headline billings, you know, because this is like music that appeals to like old metal fans, like younger fans can kind of get behind this stuff. And so it's not heavily distorted guitars. I think that they're probably playing everything in standard tuning. You know, it's got really kind of a strong, again, sort of Sammy Hagar vibe to it, I think is one of the people that I kept coming back to on this. But I will say that it seems like on this record, they've shed some of their, what I'm going to call very, very socially conscious lyrical themes, which I think was dooming some of those early singles that they released, and maybe skewed more generic. But what they added in addition to that was also some interesting guitar, not only leads, but there's some kind of interesting effects that are used that are pretty uncommon that add a little bit more flair to this. And I would overall say that I think Gods of Fire is a slight pivot in musical direction for Firstborn into what is still fundamentally kind of a vintage sounding record, but has a little bit more intrigue to it overall. I'm going to disagree with Richard that I don't think that the title track is very good. It's the first one there, and it's very much a nod to what it is that they've done in the past. And then, you know, just a skip and a hop later on Follower, you're getting a track that is probably one of the most progressive on the record, with some interesting vocal filters. I'm a big fan of the guitar solo on that song as well. So, yes. You know, overall, I would say that this record is about half of, you know, some of these sort of more expected tracks. I would say that one of the worst ones, let's see, is Intercontinental Champions is just him chugging away on one string for the majority of the song, and you called it over-singing, Richard, but the singer is certainly trying to, I would say, flower up those bars by doing a lot with the vocals. And for me, I just don't think that he's interesting or unique enough to go ahead and carry it entirely on his shoulders. So I would call
not
that a little bit of a failure. But some of the songs I do want to shout out, I'm a big fan of the track Home overall. I like Dead Rats, I think is kind of interesting. It's almost got sort of a little bit of like almost ska metal because the picking is on the offbeat in the beginnings of that one. And then I like the last track is probably the most successful of what I'll call their down the middle sort of fist pumping, you know, vibe. Vintage Metal is the bidding.
I was done with the record. Get this fuck out of here. I'm done. I can handle so much.
You did them and yourself a disservice by tuning out at that point.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm also going to agree with Richard. I actually think Gods of Fire, the opening track, is one of the best tracks on the record, personally. I'm also a big fan of Dead Rats. Well, let me qualify that. My big fan. I like Dead Rats. And I like Bad Things.
I'll get a tattoo to me next week. Trust me.
Yeah, Bad Things is cool. The instrumental track was well done.
Yes.
Yes.
And I like One of a Kind as well. Also, shout out Home. Like, these are all solid tracks at the end of the day. And Bog mentioned there's some solid leads. There's some solid, interesting guitar effects. I think there's actually some solid riffs on here too, which is something the older singles from Firstborn didn't have at all. There really wasn't anything interesting going on with them. And they had like real dad rock cover band in like their garage playing on the weekends vibe to it. This actually feels like a real metal band at this point. Much more in tune with like a classic heavy metal band. Like Bog said, that kind of fist pumping vibe you get with like the chorus, very much on display here. But if there are things on this record you don't like, well, good news. There's no track on here longer than 4 minutes. The record itself, I think, is 31 minutes long. The good parts get in, get out, and kind of lend themselves to repeat listens. And the stuff that you don't like doesn't stick around long enough for it to actually really bother you before it's moved on to something else. But maybe I don't love this record. I would struggle to say that I would listen to it again, but I'm not going to say it's bad. It's not bad at all.
I didn't suffer through this one by any stretch of the imagination. I think that when I brought them up, it was because I had remembered us, as you said, Duel, sort of giving them a rough go when those singles were first percolating out.
BLM Rock.
I wanted to ask y'all if you think that some of that was just sheer deflation after knowing this is what Chris Adler had moved on to immediately after Lamb of God. I've ordered that myself if maybe we didn't really give them a fair go of it. Although I did go back and listen to those singles again. And I think that they cheeseballed it a little bit, being sort of like the trying to be the poster metal band of Black Lives Matter, you know.
I don't recall there being anything too much to write home about those first few singles. I thought it was, from what I remember, it was very generic and very bland. And it committed, I think I even said this on the pod, it commits like the greatest sin you could commit in heavy metal. It's boring. It doesn't even have the balls to be bad. Like, take a big swing, and if you miss, you miss, but try.
Yeah, I guess metal is really worse than terrible. I mean, in that regard, you gotta give Saint Anger a little bit of a golf clap by that rationale.
So I was having this conversation actually with a friend of mine just yesterday, talking about Saint Anger, and he said that the record's overly hated on. I said, well, I don't know about overly hated on, maybe properly hated on, but you have to give it credit that 20 years later that
the snare drum
is still a topic of discussion.
I love that video you sent me, Duel, of the guy playing a keg with a bat.
Yes, that's the video I sent him that started this conversation. There's this whole fucking thread me and him had about this. Because that keg actually works for some of those songs, like one or two.
What was the video they did for their San Quentin? What song was that off of that record?
Saint Anger.
That was, I remember, it's like a meme. It's like, you know, Metallica made all these prisoners suffer through this live from shooting this video. So,
yeah. James Hetfield has that beanie on with like his jumpsuit around his waist, like trying his best to fit in. I'm one of you.
A multimillionaire, but I know what it's like.
It's good to be like you without Christian Science.
But then it made the Black Album, became a quad fucking drillionaire. They made a bunch of terrible albums after that.
Indeed, sir. So, do we have anything else that we want to discuss about this Firstborn record, Gods of Fire? What do you think about the album artwork, Bog? You usually have something to say about the album art.
Yeah, it didn't strike me in any particular way. I think I did notice that they have a new logo, which is kind of, yes. I don't know, I like it. It's an improvement,
for sure.
Looks like the Van Halen logo, which I said sonically, it kind of slots right in there with the best of both worlds era of Van Halen. So I think it's appropriate.
Steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
This is
improvement overall in this band, actually. I got to give them credit for that. Like, for every facet of this act improved, except for maybe Chris Adler's drums, which are probably as high as they are ever going to go.
Yeah. I definitely think this is a good foundation. Like, there is, it's, you know, to, as you would say, there's a lot of improvements. And I think, honestly, if they go with the shit that works this record, they could make a solid or even possibly a great record. Who the fuck knows? But the shit's there. They just got to build on the right stuff on the album to make a fuck yeah album.
There were some prog elements on here, and I'd love to see this band go full King Crimson. Like, that's what I think the next, the way that they could actually make themselves pretty fascinating is, like, they have avant-garde, a little bit of, like, a vintage feel and just, like, yeah, really go, like, you know, bring in the tapping, bring in avant-garde elements. I think that that's where this band could actually excel, because they have, obviously, the technical merit in every single member to utilize it. You know, the singer clearly has a great range. You know, we got James Lomenzo and Chris Adler. I looked up the guitar player, and he doesn't seem to have quite the same pedigree as either of those guys, but obviously I think that those solos speak for themselves. If you can play,
yeah, they're great. That's part of the album, in my opinion.
You should be able to do it. So I'd say go for it, guys.
I think the only thing that would hold them back from that direction is they're clearly trying to, I don't want to, this is going to sound negative, but like lowest common denominator. I think in the thread I said this is like Audioslave. If Audioslave wanted to be a metal band, it's very radio rocky in its approach to songwriting. Very verse chorus, going for catchy and trying like hooks and trying to stick in your mind, as opposed to like embracing the shreddy elements of classic heavy metal. So it would be cool, as you suggested, for them to explore that element of their sound, but based on what we've heard on this record, I'm not sure that's what they're going for or will continue to go for in the future. Scores for me, don't hate this record. Don't hate it at all. Perfectly serviceable. Not sure I'll ever listen to it again. But if some of the better tracks on this record come on my Spotify mix, I'm not going to skip it either. A 2. 2 out of, just for all of you to remember, our scores are at a 3.3. So I didn't just give it a 2 out of 10 after not shitting on it. So a 2, which equals out to a 6 if everyone else were to give.
Wow.
All right. Wow.
I have a 2.2. You're worse than I was. I thought it'd be the opposite. You were score-wise. I was a little more merciful than you were. So
apparently I am the angel of mercy here, because I actually gave this a 2.5. All right.
Holy shit.
I couldn't quite bump it up to a B. But it's right there, you know. Wow. This is a record. If this was the only record these guys ever made, it would be something they could be proud of, I think. And again, you know, as you said, Duel, if I'm not skipping it, then I can't say it fucking sucks. So
yeah, there's potential. There's got to harvest it properly, but it's there.
I'll have to go back and check, but I think this record just got a tenth of a point higher than the last Cannibal Corpse record. Firstborn's Gods of Fire gets a 6.7. From the Fundamentalists. Holy shit. It's an upset of the century, baby. Let's go ahead and move on to the next full-length record we're going to be discussing. I think this one will have much higher scores all around.
Yes.
Fundamentalist podcast, darling. Western frontier-themed, atmospheric black metal masters, Wayfarer from Denver, Colorado, have returned with the follow-up to their classic A Romance with Violence with a new Great American Frontier black metal classic entitled American Gothic. Now, continuing on the themes of cowboys, vaudeville shows, and shootouts, and overall exploitation of the Western frontier amongst the capitalist class, 8 tracks, 43 minutes long, which actually brings me to the first point I want to make about this record, is it's much more focused than other Wayfarer records. The other Wayfarer records, not that they ever felt overly bloated, although their detractors would say that that was definitely the case. There is no longer any 12, 15, 16, or even 20-minute songs as we have seen on previous Wayfarer records here. Instead, the longest track that we have here is 9 minutes and 6 seconds, and then we have the opening track, which is 7 minutes. And then other than that, there's nothing else. Well, False Constellation
is 7 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing else other than that. There's tracks that are even as low as under 4 minutes in length, which for Wayfarer seemed almost unthinkable at times before. Musically, well, things are a little bit different, but that's what we're here to discuss. Bog, I know you're just as big a fan of this band as I am. I will let you begin the discussion of American Gothic.
So when you first start this thing, there's some dub at the beginning. And I said, you know, we're not completely unfamiliar with that on Wayfarer Records. But on this one, initially, I almost thought it was Helicopters. But on repeat listens, I realized foolishly that is, in fact, a steam engine clamoring down the tracks. So certainly in theme of what this band does, I'm going to completely agree with you in that I would say overall, this is a very focused records and that they have really distilled what the concept of Wayfarer is and really made the best version of it possible, I would say, in American Gothic. I would say that this is the best sounding record that they ever did. I absolutely salivate over this guitar tone. And there's a little bit of a psych rock element that they've incorporated here with some of the phase effects that I don't remember being prominently featured on A Romance with Violence or World's Blood. I like the slightly more trim song lengths because I think it allows you to kind of pop in and pop out slightly easier than having to really get into a full album experience, which I think was the best way that you probably could have consumed, in particular, A Romance with Violence, their 2020 record. I looked back at it actually, yes, and mentioned in the pregame that last time we reviewed a Wayfarer record was in episode 67. So it's been a long time, guys. Still doing the pod. I guess I'm the one who's bobbed in and out at this point. So. Overall, this record fucking rules. I would say that one of the things that I thought was a little bit of a stretch is what people were purporting to be the lyrics on A Romance with Violence. And I went back and read the lines as he was singing them in American Gothic. And it was a lot more discernible. He features what I consider to be a much more mid-tone, almost more black metal vocal styling on this one that didn't show up nearly as much in their previous records. Before he would kind of lean in on the gutturals a little bit more, which is something that I always really liked about this band. And those are not gone. But I also feel like in some ways, maybe they made this record a little bit more black metal overall. And I've wondered if that's because maybe they're spending their time over in their other group, Stormkeep, as Duel had mentioned. And so maybe some of that artistic influence is kind of seeping into Wayfarer. Duel, I can see that you want to say something.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. Just because I think it is still very much a black metal record, don't get me wrong, but it's in a much more subtle way. You mentioned the vocals, and I think the vocals actually might be the thing that tethers it the most to the black metal subgenre still. Even at the opening track, like the distortion is gone, or much less prominent than you would expect in a black metal record. And that happens all the time. But you see the chords, the scales that you would normally hear in black metal. They're just being performed on either an acoustic guitar or a very mildly overdriven guitar tone. The black metal is coming out, but it's much more, I guess, effectively intertwined with the theme. So you get like this Western frontierish sound mixed in with the black metal chords, mixed in with that overall sense of evil. Although instead of the evil here are fucking oil barons and fucking land exploiters instead of fucking satanic sadists.
You think that this isn't as distorted as their previous records? Because I feel like they dialed it up slightly from where we were on A Romance with Violence. Like, this is a really, really saturated guitar tone. This is the best this band has ever sounded, in my opinion. And I don't mean that via the songwriting. I literally mean just the production, the way that the guitars sound, the way that the leads are. I think that I didn't look at the production credits, but I would be curious to know if they had a different producer or a different person mix this record, because I feel like it just hits a little bit harder.
I agree that it's their best sounding record. That I think it's actually, I was telling Richards right before you joined the recording, I think if anything, this might be the greatest realization of the concept. I think they merge the worlds that they're trying to merge about as well as I could probably imagine it to be. Like, it's not, I'm not saying I don't think it's black metal, or I don't think it's like, you know, got too much distortion in the guitar. It definitely does. But I think it's like the perfect amount while still maintaining the country western vibe they're trying to keep as well. And then the country western vibe never really overpowers the black metal either. It's perfectly balanced, as all things should be on this record. Richard, yeah, I saw you just curl your lip and kind of give a ho-hum hater bullshit face. So,
well, first of all, it's kind of a shtick, firstly. And secondly, I do agree with everything you said. I think it is their most balanced record. Like, it's most balanced of all their records. And it's noticeably less aggressive than, because there's nothing here that matches Ironside or Massacre of the Gunslingers, because that's heavy as shit, especially that'd be a 1-2 combo on Romance Violence.
I disagree with that. What? Okay.
But that's in my opinion.
Did you hear the Thousand Tombs of Western Promise, dude? That shit, yes. That shit's raw as fuck.
Amazing song title, too, by the way. Amazing song title.
I mean, that's my perspective on it. But even though it is a bit less aggressive, the songwriting, it's more cohesive. And some of the fat in some of the songs is trimmed to where it's, you know, more digestible. So I feel that was a positive, not a net negative. So I don't mean that in a disparaging way at all. So
one of the things that I think that we've talked about is sort of the distillation of the concept here. And this is really more of an intellectual debate I was having with myself about this record, because this is the full and absolute realization of this Western, Western expansion black metal theme that Wayfarer has been doing since their inception. And I'm kind of with you, Duel, which is that at this point, I don't think they're ever going. I would have been surprised to hear them say that they were going to be able to top A Romance with Violence, but they've clearly done it here with American Gothic. And so my question is, where do they go from here? I wondered to myself if I was going to not appreciate this record as much because it's really covering the same themes in a kind of slightly more vague and general way that they have done a lot of their career. And at this point, I wonder, is it tired? But it kind of brings up the debate as, you know, when is it, you know, valid for a band to just continue doing the same thing, not sonically over and over again, but when you have a theme, and we're going to talk about, you know, theme bands, I think when we get into, you know, Windrose, when personally do you grow tired of that? Because it was something that I was asking myself, is I would have loved to have seen Wayfarer go a completely different direction, because they put out such a strong record previously. Rather than just kind of, I don't, resting on their laurels is a pejorative expression, but they went back and they did what this band does. You know, are they going to do a sixth record that's about, steam trains and Western expansion? And are you going to be interested in it?
Like on this record, like, or all their records, I feel like they kind of go in almost a chronological order as things happen. I feel like World's Blood was a lot about the Native Americans, so to speak, and like them being pushed out. And then you had A Romance with Violence. You had the tracks like, you know, The Iron Horse 1 and 2 about the introduction of the steam train, the Transcontinental Railroad, and how that played into the expansion. And now here you have on this record, like the West is essentially settled as they keep pushing further and further west. And now the land is being exploited by oil barons and such like that. I think you see that in The Thousand Tombs of Western Promise or in A High Plains Eulogy. This does feel like an ending point here, like the death of like the Western promise or like the Western dream that existed there. I feel like this record is kind of dancing on that tombstone a little bit, so to speak. Also, Bog, I know you're the only one here who saw this movie, but I got some real Killers of the Flower Moon vibes from Black Plumes Over God's Country.
I see that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know if maybe they are about the same events or maybe just in general share some of the overall themes, but that one and Reaper on the Oil Fields as well kind of felt like they were talking about maybe the events that took place in that movie and that obviously took place in real life as well.
Yeah, I without specifically calling out like the Osage Indians, I think that it would be, you know, surprising to hear that they were about the exact same things, but same land, you know, same time era, like same era. And so, you know, I would say it's an appropriate correlation.
And overall, like it's still got this very grim, i.e. very black metal message. There is this really grim voiceover that takes place at the end, I believe, of Black Plumes Over God's Country, where the vocalist says, "What we've got now is a world full of oil drillers and railroad barons, cattle thieves and company men, 50 stores and a tattered flag. This is the new American Gothic." And that essentially distills that cynicism of what became of the Western frontier, that kind of boils it all down in that one little sentence. And I think it does it pretty effectively.
I really like that song, Black Plumes Over God's Country. That beginning riff almost has a little bit of like a classic rock vibe. I know that I use that descriptor just to describe Firstborn, but I do have it written down here, and that there's a very sort of anthemic quality to it. And the guitar solo towards the end of that track also has a little bit more of a vintage kind of melodic sound to it, rather than just the full on shredder, solos that are featured in other places on this record. And I think it's maybe a little bit of kind of like the letdown of this record. I think that it starts out really aggressive, and then we enter into, To Enter My House Justified, which I just have to call out is a blatant ripoff of the riff from Harvester of Sorrow. Like, 5 seconds into that, I was like, really? Really, guys? Like, we couldn't have changed.
It's also from, I think, Down from the Sky from Trivium at some point, too. I don't know if you heard that as well.
It's actually one of my favorites off the stuff. This album was that particular song, Enter My House and Justified.
No, it's one of the best tracks on the record. It's sick.
It's only right in the very beginning, and then right at the very end is when it's used. And so I think that they knew it was, maybe brushing up against some familiar sonic territory there. Yeah. But I don't know. To me, that was a slight misstep on this record. I think that they should have tried to work on that to make it not so obvious. Because, I put it on back to back, and I was like, it's in a different key, obviously. But, the notes are so similar. Only the very end part of the riff is any different. So
well, like one thing I didn't like about the record, one thing I did like is the first song, The Thousand Jews of the Western Promise, that initial melody of it, they kind of bring back in the final track, False Constellation, which a lot of classic Dream Theater shit was like that as well. So I thought that was a kind of cool thing. You don't see it a lot nowadays. It's one that kind of stuck out. That was like a cool thing, which more artists would kind of do, especially this kind of progressive style of music.
I really liked that sort of twangy acoustic slide guitar that was featured on The Thousand Tombs of Western Promise. But I will say that I wasn't a fan of like the tinny clangy piano that was featured so prominently in False Constellation, which was actually
I love it so much. I was just about to talk about how much I loved that. Okay, why don't you like it?
I don't know, because it sounds
vintage,
inauthentic. It sounds like an overly characterized version of what we think a piano might sound like in a shitty tavern. Maybe that's the truth, but for me, it's a little too Hollywood, I would say, if that makes any sense. It's straight out of Central Casting. I would have liked to have seen them. You could use a piano and play that same riff, and it probably would have had the same impact. Whereas the little I'm not sure how to describe it. It is just kind of like a clangy, sort of slightly untuned, sort of poor resonance piano, like you would have in the corner of an old West bar room. Like I said, felt like a caricature.
I could see that, because that is exactly what I thought. I thought about movies like Maverick or Wyatt Earp and a bunch of mustached gunmen playing cards where shit might pop off at any point in time when someone's been caught cheating. And this tinny little organ in the back from this guy in a red vest and a top hat is just jigging along.
With a curly like handle.
Yeah, go curl a mustache. Yeah.
With a glass of whiskey on top of his fucking piano, just fucking going along. I don't know. It fit the vibe, bro. I was with it. So much of this, I wish this record had come out when I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2.
I'll say, very similar vibes.
I think that maybe for me, I did have that feeling overall that I think that this is starting to become too much of a characterization, whereas a record like World's Blood had the Western feel to it, and it felt very sort of raw and interesting at that point. They've distilled it down, and so I would think it would be a misstep for Wayfarer to do another record like this. But as I said, and I would like you guys to respond to this, like I use the Opeth, a band that's obviously near and dear to my heart, analogy to myself to say I had often said that I wish Michael Aucherfeldt would have retired the Opeth name and started a new act to do what we're calling sort of the prog rock, psych rock era of that band. And so, you know, is it unfair of me to say that I think Wayfarer needs to move away from this? Like they've done this theme to death. We have five records now and they're awesome records, but I think that this is it. Like, I think that they've gone as far as they can go with this concept. And because there are elements of it, as I just said, that are sounding like a little bit too Hollywood to me, it's not resonating as you know, much as it did previously. And I had a little bit of this feeling on A Romance with Violence too, but it's taken it a step further here, in particular on False Constellations.
I'll say two things. One, I kind of agree with you, but I also didn't know how much further they could take it after A Romance with Violence. And they did progress right. The sound and made it even more perfect. And lastly, I think they could continue sort of in the same vein. They would just have to focus. Like, if they did a concept record based off the life of one individual from this time period, I don't know, maybe say they did one around Sitting Bull or whatever, that could work. I don't know how much more they can continue to talk about just like the Western frontier in general, because after five records, like, I feel like they've covered a lot of ground, as you've said. And I don't want them to become Lamb of God, where it's just like, I stop becoming excited at a new Wayfarer release because you already know what you're going to get. But I don't think we're there yet. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt because they continue to exceed at my expectations.
Duel, you're a huge Stormkeep fan. I know that. You've admitted at times, you know, I don't know if on the air, but behind the scenes, that objectively you like Stormkeep better than Wayfarer. And for me, I was a little disappointed, I guess, because I love Stormkeep, but I'm like, this is a black metal record, you know, spooky castle purple album cover. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So yeah, like
the keys to my heart.
In some ways that itself is also kind of a overcharacterization, you know? And so I'm fearful that these guys, I don't know, they're grabbing hold of like ideas that are already solidified. And I would like to see them go ahead and try and expand on the genre a little bit more, because they're obviously so talented and they obviously play so well together. I'd like to see them be on the bleeding edge of this genre rather than just sort of continuing in one vein that they initially carved out themselves and are now kind of just flowing down. And then, with Stormkeep, you know, how, you know, six inch spike gauntlets and corpse paint, you know, has been done to death at this point. So
would you not say that this record is not on the cutting edge of their corner of the black metal world?
No, I wouldn't.
Who is doing Western themed black metal then better? More on the cutting edge.
But it's they didn't push any farther necessarily than A Romance with Violence. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, thematically we're in the same place. This sounds better, you know, I love this record. I'm bringing it up as a sort of devil's advocate, like for the sake of the conversation here. That was my biggest sort of feeling of it. And in terms of the Western, there is another band that I saw that is doing like a Western metal thing, although obviously they haven't really entered into the conversation as much as, at all, I suppose. So,
to your point, Pete, you know, it's all about stretching a theme too far. I mean, somehow Amon Amarth still putting out records. Style the records aren't that great. No, it's Deicide still put out, say, fuck God. Yeah, it's not, it's a lot less interesting than it used to be, but it's still a thing. So you could do a fucking concept. You could beat that horse till there's maggots and just, it's, bought his goo, you're still punching the shit out of it. To your point,
said, Cannibal Corpse has been making the same records since, you know, 2000.
Yeah, Cannibal Corpse, yeah, same thing, like Murder, Death, they still made, what was it, do as Cannibal, the 16th album? Some shit like that? I was like, listen to this record, I was thinking about the whole idea, you know, with any band, really, you know, when you're trying to found it, sometimes you hit it, sometimes you don't, sometimes you balance it, and then when you get to the point, you streamline it, like, you finally found what works, and you're going with it, like, in a way, it's almost it is the death of creativity in a way. Like, you found what your fans like, you know how to do the plug it in to make like the perfect X album by X band. But then you rest your laurels because you have your loyal fans are going to buy it. You know, two are the same type of bands, and you get used to that lifestyle, that income. And like, do you want to risk doing some crazy avant-garde, some straight out of left field? Because that's kind of fucked your whole thing up. So you have endorsements and all this other shit. So I kind of contemplate that. Well, this is record.
Duel said it before, though, you know, when we're talking about Saint Anger, like it's more, I would say that I have more respect for a band that's going to swing and miss hard than kind of go down the middle. And my fear is that Wayfarer with this, after this record, is going to turn into Lamb of God.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, this is infinitely more interesting than the last couple of Lamb of God records. I feel it is those cohesive thing they've done, but like what's the next step?
Well, the next
step, really.
The next step is not musically. Is taking a step back from Wayfarer, because like the members in this band, the creative intelligentsia in this band have two other bands, Stormkeep and also Lycotinon, the death metal band. And like if you read interviews with them, they say that they like to keep these all three of these bands like segregated in a way, because you get to explore vastly different ideas in each band. Like Lycotinon's like a very, very like aggressive, pissed off death metal band, and Stormkeep is very much like a symphonic, like D&D fucking black metal band. And
yeah.
Wayfarer is probably the most experimental, I guess you could say, sound wise of any of the other bands. So I mean, yeah, there's a lot of ways they could still take Wayfarer. Yeah. Like my biggest thing is just like thematically, I just don't want like the same generalized. We're in the West again, boys. Don the cowboy hats and six shooters. We're going back with Wayfarer, yeah.
Assle straps and all. I believe the same, at least the same drummer. Wayfarer, Stormkeep, and Blood Incantation, I believe. It's the same guy.
Same guitar player, too.
Like, if you give me a concept record on Doc Holliday, I'm in. Sold.
Oh, I'd say that'd be one of the better options. But
that concept album about, like, Sitting Bull, you said, or, like, Crazy Horse, that would actually be sick. Like, you're actually selling me on this. So, Wayfarer, if you hear this.
So, our main concept record about, like, Custer's Fall or something, that'd be badass as fuck, too. So,
yeah, just, like, focus, like hyper focus on like one instance, event, or person, as opposed to like just like the grand overall
general
history of it.
Yeah, but I think it's a great record though. I like it a lot. Romance Fights, you like a lot. Again, I thought this slightly less aggressive, but songwriting, they excel better than that, and this trim straight to the point, and definitely the highlights of the year as far as black metal, fucking easily.
It's not only one of the highlights of black metal, it's one of the highlights of metal in general. 3.2.
I'm gonna give it a 3 myself.
2.9. I like this one a lot.
So it gets a 9.1. Wow. Very nice score. It's up there with like three or four other records that are between like the 9 and 9.3 range. I think that one, Cattle Decapitation, and trying to think of another record that we all really gushed over. I know I gave huge scores to Grim Warlocks and Withered Hags from Hell Ripper, but I can't remember what everyone else gave it either.
Yeah, I think that one got a 9.
Yeah, it's up there. It's up there. There's a few records like... I need to go back and listen to it, like, so we can actually, by rating, grab podcast of the year or album of the year. But I know we all have our own lists at the end of the day. It just would be interesting to all have our own list and have our own aggregated. This is how it all shook out. But there's always albums that we don't actually review that end up sneaking onto the list in some way, shape, or form. So,
I mean, it's no Empire of the Blind. It's all right, I guess, though.
Yeah, okay. Moving on. That's going to do it for the reviews section of the Fundamentalist podcast this time. Let's move on into the return of an old segment, one of my favorite segments as a huge fan of J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth Legendarium and The Lord of the Rings, as you might have gathered based on the intro to this particular episode. I'm, of course, talking about our segment called Mordor Metal Monthly. The not quite monthly segment where we shine a spotlight on any band doing J.R.R. Tolkien Middle Earth themed heavy metal. This edition of Mordor Metal Monthly was suggested by our good friend Bog, and he suggested the dwarven metal band Wind Rose. You may know them from their smash hit Diggy Diggy Hole. I swear it gets less cringe from there. So, join us as we are just dwarves and we are digging a hole ever deeper with each episode. Let's talk about Windrose. Bog, again, you suggested this, so I feel like it's only appropriate to let you begin with discussing Windrose.
So, the first time I came across these guys was definitely some served content. There was a dance remix of their aforementioned Diggy Diggy Hole.
Oh, God.
And it was, you know, them in dwarf costumes jumping around on a stage. And I don't know. I mean, for me, I can kind of go two ways on this. You know, that seems ridiculous. And
these five Italian dudes hopped up on Tuscan wine and furs and fucking hammers.
Yeah, you sort of alluded to my next point, which I think it's worth noting that these guys are from Pisa, of the leading tower of Pisa in Tuscany, Italy. So they have some of the most beautiful views in the world, some of the best wine. I'm sure the food is probably incredible, right? And they decided to start a concept band and essentially cosplay on stage a race that lives in the dark, in mines and in holes in the ground. It's just the contrast of that is fascinating, but it's also kind of like, you know, it's kind of the Florida thing too, right? Like death metal came from, you know, again, like these beautiful white sand beaches, you know, like, you know, tan women in bikinis. Like,
yo, you know? Yo, that you're describing Hell South yeah. Florida. Have you been to Cantonment, sir? Death metal is huge, highly appropriate for the state of Florida.
You're correct. Florida is a crazy place, man. Like when I lived in the South, I thought that it was all like Miami. And then I learned about the
Florida
the
man's red, real baby all day, every day.
Riviera. North Florida is a terrifying place. So
Florida man is very real and he will hurt you.
Yeah. So I would say that I hadn't listened to anything aside from basically the Diggy Diggy Hole memes when I recommended this to Duel. I'd sent it to you. And I'll, you know, I can just say that I think I've come back around to think that like Windrose, these guys are fantastic. I don't even really like power metal that much, but, the quality of the music here, I think they sell themselves quite short with Diggy Diggy Hole. Although Duel, you said that the revenue from that alone, maybe, you know, bought them all, an upgraded dwarven, you know, armor set for the stage.
Performance. You see the engraving on those stage hammers, bro? That shit didn't come cheap.
Yeah.
Nicer axe, baby.
Before we get into music, too, one of the things that I wanted to point out is that they also, very much like Amon Amarth, also mentioned on this episode, have a signature style of pit, quote unquote, effectively a dance that their members do. And so they do the mining pit or the digging pit. And so there's actually two styles here. You can either be like a pickaxe picker or you can be like the shovel picker, you know. And so I'm miming these out. You either throw dirt over your shoulder or you come from the top and you're like, you know, chipping away at a rock or something. And they do that when they play Diggy Diggy Hole at their concerts.
Makes me sick. Other than that,
dude, I'd fucking do it, man. I don't know why you guys hate on that shit. They're running around in a circle. I don't know why you can't stop every once in a while and do a little rowing pit or a little digging pit. Why the fuck not?
Actually, the show, I was at last night. There's some guy with an Amon Amarth back patch, like big back patch, like fucking poser. Every time I see it, so the Amarth back patch, fucking poser. Anyways, continue.
Because while it might be a great song, I do not embrace the lyrical content of Les Claypool's to defy the laws of tradition, sir. Run in a fucking circle like a proper metalhead and stop this fucking slam dancing, picking up chains, throwing dirt over your shoulder, rowing a goddamn boat, hipster Gen Z bullshit. Run in a circle.
Agree, sir.
Goddamn.
Fuck yeah. Or push the fuck out of somebody. A or
friendly,
B.
Friendly
go
violence
C.
fun, everybody. Let's fucking bring it back to Exodus, all right?
Except Wall of Death's all right. I've only done one and that was enough for me. I really fuck with the wall.
I've done the Wall of Death a few times.
Death is a lot of fun. It's not a pit. It's a wall. Different.
I've seen too many people get smashed the fucking face, get fucked up. So I didn't want to. I was one and done for that myself personally. So.
Yeah, I was close to disaster in mine too, but someone else ate that bullet. So.
Anyways, back to
as Bog mentioned. Diggy Diggy Hole is by far their most popular song. I think Richard mentioned the numbers. Diggy Diggy Hole has something like 44 million streams, and their next most popular is just under 8 million, I think it is.
Yes.
Wow. Which is still
mine with seven, nearly 8 million, essentially.
And
Diggy
record.
Diggy Hole is essentially 45 million plays.
Yes.
On Spotify, at least.
And that's not even their best record. Like, I think I discussed this on the Slack channel with the guys and a little bit off air. So now I want to share this point. I think this band does a little bit of a disservice to themselves with Diggy Diggy Hole. Granted, obviously, it brought them a ton of attention, got them a ton of streams. And I, too, found out this band from served content from an Instagram video of them playing
myself
Diggy
as well.
Diggy Hole.
Reels. That's how I found it.
So clearly, them or their label paid for this advertisement of them doing this shit. And it worked. Fucking, they got hugely popular.
They're also on Napalm Records. So them and Austrian Death Machine are on the same label, which is fascinating.
Them, Catatonia's on there. Imperial Decadence. Alter Bridge is on there now. There's a bunch of big bands on there.
Yeah, tour package. Austrian Death Machine and fucking Windrose coming to a city near you. can you imagine Tim Lambesis coming on stage to do guest vocals for Diggy Diggy Hole? And then they bring out like a bag with that was supposed to be his wife.
You've been waiting all episode for that one, haven't you?
You've been waiting to tee that one up.
So when Pantera's going across Europe, these shows they've been doing, they've got like big guys from metal bands who guest vocals on Walk. So the guy that's vocalist for Mayhem,
Attila?
Attila, yeah, came out, and all the black ones, Poser, sell out. Like, you don't expect anything less. I mean, Seder came out too, I think, actually. So
going back to the point, as Bog had mentioned, there's actually a very solid power metal band underneath the memery going on here that they had to do to get noticed. I'm glad on the record after Winter Saga is the album that has Diggy Diggy Hole, and then what is it, Warfront, the record from last year, 2022. It's the superior record, and they thankfully do not have any attention grabbing songs, at least like we're gonna take the piss out of ourselves. At least no more so than dressing up as dwarves with fucking hammers and talking about digging holes already did.
Are they actually short? Is that the video there? Are they actually short guys? Or are they?
They're like Italian. Does that count?
I don't know. Are Italian
no,
short?
They don't seem short. They have platforms that they stand on, but the guy seems like he's pretty tall. I don't know.
I was kind of curious. All right. Like, are they shorter men? That's why I came with the dwarf theme. They're kind of like the 5'5" era, you know, height normally. So.
No, they seem like a normal Mediterranean sized men. So 5'8"
Good deal. Good deal. Oh. All right. That's fair. That's average.
Yeah. Good wide drinking height. Great picking height, you know. Anyway, let's talk about the good shit. This band is being featured because they're a J.R.R. Tolkien themed metal band. And it just so happens that the best songs of this band happen to be the ones where they directly take lyrical content or song titles straight from the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. I'm talking about songs like To Erebor, Battle of the Five Armies, and There and Back Again. Those tend to be like the most metal, aka the bangers of the album. And especially on Warfront, like you have tracks like Fellows of the Hammer, which are their mid-tempo power metal sing-alongs. Like, this is like beer drinking music, but in a fun way, not so much as like, I don't know, what's another beer drinking met
ale tankard. It's not quite that much. Like, there's, I feel like taking the a little more seriously than fucking Ale Storm.
Yeah,
enjoy fairly much.
Which we'll talk about Ale Storm a little bit when we talk about cheese and pastiche and fucking your theme kind of getting in the way of you actually being a band, or whether or not this is just like
pirate metal.
Yeah. I think this is actually a super solid band, super solid power metal band.
The symphonic album, that's because I'm used to like Iced Earth and shit. Like Symphony X, which there's little keyboards. It's still just mainly riffing and shit. The keyboards in the background. So this is my first kind of foray to a power metal that is heavily symphonic. Like, sounds great, a record, though. I can imagine, let's say there are like technical troubles in a live set, I imagine it'd be like a pure dumpster fucking fire. But if you know, if things working right, it'd be a great fucking show.
When I was listening to a lot of this, I think when I finally turned the corner and said, you know, this band is actually really good is, you know, I was like, I listen to a lot of Children of Bodom, big fan of that band. There's no way I can try and criticize these guys for being driven by keyboards a lot of the time. And for me to say that that's not fair. In particular, I wanted to actually go ahead and compliment the vocalist because he actually has a pretty incredible range, but he doesn't come off as being a really like, I don't know. I'm struggling here to find the word exactly. Is that he's not particularly operatic. It's actually a very kind of like a manly vocal. And I think that it plays really well into this concept. I think that he is a standout, talent in this group. I don't know if he, you know, affected you all in the same way. I want to call him out. Francisco Cavalieri is his name. And if you want to hear some very Italian sounding names, go ahead and read the rest of the members here. I don't want to do it at the risk of seeming too offensive, but it's some fun stuff.
Credit to his race, the dwarven race, that is. Did any of you notice that this band was not nearly as interesting in the first two records, Shadows Over Lothdruin and Wardens of the West Wind? They were bad, but this band got a lot better starting with Stonehill and especially Winter Saga.
Well, where did you find those first two records? Because I started with Stonehill. I wasn't able to find the other two. Were they on YouTube?
Yeah, you have to go on YouTube.
So they're on Spotify. Because I'll listen to Winter Saga and half of Battlefront.
Shadows over Lothadruin, I do not think is on Spotify. Wardens of the West Wind got a re-recording, at least according to Spotify, that is on Spotify. So they have four of them. But
re-record is a mixed bag.
But I will say that the quality in songwriting and just the overall how much I enjoyed the band took a huge leap starting with Stonehymn and even more so at Winter Saga, because like Winter Saga is exponentially better, and I don't use that word lightly, exponentially better than Stonehymn, and Warfront is even better than that.
I kind of feel similar to that band Grand Vegas. The first track was kind of more doomy, like they're still really good, but also you got the more heavy metal, that had more just metal, less doom. Like they got way fucking better, especially they being influenced more by the Dio Sabbath era shit. That band's fantastic as well.
They were a little bit of a bummer live. I remember seeing them without the gates.
Yeah, that's fucking New Worlds are going to make it. Yeah.
Weird pairing.
Great record. I never saw them live, but I love the great shit live, at least the past couple. So,
Winter Saga was the first record that was released by Napalm Records.
I wondered
if it was going to be Stonehymn, because I'm with you, Duel, is that they seem to kind of get it together on that Stonehymn record, and then the production value took a pretty big leap forward.
On got that Napalm money.
Yeah.
That label money. It did them wonders. Did obviously like visible or audible, I guess you should say, results when it comes to that. And maybe conceptually, like they just finally, I don't know what the costumes looked like before then. It might have looked like really sad Ren Faire shit in the very beginning, and now it looks passable, you know?
They're pretty legit. Yeah. It looks like it's heavy. You know, I remember seeing him dance around on stage, and I was like, you know, that's probably a drag. He's probably happy to take that off when the show's over.
Yeah. I just think about what it smells like.
The only band that I've ever thought about that is when I went and saw Septic Flesh, and their costumes were all fucked up now, and I was like, dude, that thing is probably gnar.
Yeah,
dude.
Like in New Orleans, I was talking to the guys who run Southport Hall, the owners, and they were talking about loading out Flesh God Apocalypse and like their like long coats and like their stage garb. He's like, dude, you open the fucking van door and you smell that shit. Yes.
Fucking, I remember I saw 1349 at Siberia back, you know, back when they were still metal and left and came back to be metal again.
With Necrophagia?
No, it was them, Wolfhammer.
Black Anvil?
It was 1349 Origin co-headline. It's a very weird co-headline. It was a good show. It was a very strange co-headline, too.
Is it Origin?
Origin 1349, yeah. It was a very odd line.
I was there.
I remember watching 34.9, and that was enjoying. I thought the guitar sounded a little thin, but the bass player was a massive, like, thick wool-looking fucking robe, dude. I see him outside, he was smoking a cigarette. He's just fucking drenched, man. Yeah, very miserable, real talk.
So, I think we can all agree that we enjoy Windrose, but let's actually expand this conversation inside of Mortal or Metal Monthly, and that's when is it too much? Like, when is like a band go like way overboard? Like, when is the cheese, the theme, like actually get in the way of you actually being a quality metal band? And I think there was a band we mentioned earlier called Ailstorm that is actually probably a pretty good candidate for that. What is it? What's their big song?
A Drink.
Yeah. And then who's the other one? Is it Swashbuckle? Just like, we are here to steal your beer and take all your rum.
No. That's Ailstorm. But Swashbuckle, that part about it, but there's a legit great death thrash. The last record about it was fucking awesome. I love that goddamn album. Now they just disappeared to the ether.
Agreed. They're good. But I think Ailstorm is a good example of like, okay, you have your theme and that's what got you popular, but what is actually there once you scratch the surface of, okay, you dress up a goofy pirate costumes and you have skits where you go arr on the record. Yeah. Like, what are you actually listening to?
I will say, actually, I got to see a band live in Siberia, actually, with my buddy Jacob and my old lady. And they put on a really good show. Actually, it was for their Sunset of the Golden Age record from 2014 to 2015. We saw them. And they put on a damn good, they played off that record, which is actually, minus the song Drink, that actually is a legit killer power metal type record, especially the song 1741, The Battle of Cartagena, is a fucking fantastic. It's also progressive by their standards, like kind of pirate themed heavy metal. Even their first record, which they did re-record, Captain Morgan's Revenge, another killer like power pirate themed power, so kicks ass. Now at this point, they're kind of at the point of being a cliche and falling in on the same old things at this point. But the 2014 record, though, is definitely worth a listen. It's some legit great shit, in my opinion, at least. But yeah.
Bog, do you have a band that fucking comes to mind where you're like, they went too far?
I mean,
delve too greedily, too deep.
I think it would be unfair of us to not bring up Gwar in this conversation.
Oh.
Because they've created their own mythology. And they've been riding that thing, you know, post David Brockie's death. Many years ago, I used to, you know, sort of roll my eyes at Gwar because I thought that they were patronizing metal.
They were. That was all theme of the band. Like, initially, it was a joke.
Well, that's a very punk rock attitude. And, you know, as a fragile, sensitive teenager, I didn't jive with that shit. But now these days, the artistic effort and the sarcasm of Gwar, and also just like the perseverance of actually like doing their shows and the following that they've created, I think has legitimized something that at one point was teetering on being too much, in my opinion. I think that a really short answer, Duel, for when does it become too much is highly subjective, because I am not familiar with Alestorm, but it sounds, you know, in some ways I'm like, I can get behind Tolkien because, you know, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan. I'm a big dork, play Dungeons and Dragons, do that whole thing. Like the whole pirates thing, though, that's not really my thing. Like a vampire band, probably not really into that. You know, someone who grew up on the Twilight books might be more inclined to do that. And so I'm not really sure there's a right or wrong answer. I think if you look at it in terms of sort of the artistic merit in sort of the fine art sense, that's another really tricky one to thread here. But I would say that, you know, a band like, as previously mentioned, Wayfarer is sort of making inroads with a theme that's actually going somewhere, you know, historically and making a commentary on culture. And I think that bands that are not making any kind of commentary on culture and are not playing strictly to a pre-existing fan base are probably going to be a little bit in open ocean for you know, artistic integrity.
Speaking of making a commentary on culture, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit ashamed of you that your first instance of thinking about vampires and vampirism, given its rich literary history, is fucking Twilight. What the fuck?
That's pretty fucking lame, dude. Real talk.
I didn't say that. I was just Anne Rice.
Dracula, the book. Come on.
Disgusting, disgusting.
All right.
I was a comment on it, but you know.
But point taken.
Well, I think though that maybe that's kind of it. There is that. Who would a vampire band attract? Would it be the Anne Rice crowd? Would it be the Stephanie Myers crowd, or would it be the Nosferatu crowd? It's hard to know. I guess that maybe that's also another tell, is to say, like, if a band can do it, then it's enough. And if they can't, then we don't know about them because they don't fucking exist.
Well, the Anne Rice crowd is just the Nosferatu crowd with sex appeal.
Pretty much.
Who shower.
I mean, there's a vampire cafe down here in the French Quarter now.
That's cringe.
Of course.
Well, it's actually very popular.
Why would there not be?
It is popular.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, and apparently, the wait staff are all really into it. And like, I mean, it's funny, like as a guy who said I would dig in the pit and I would fucking row in the pit, but I wouldn't go to the vampire cafe. So I understand the contradiction there. These days, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm going to start working on my fucking dwarven cosplay. So that way when Rose makes a US tour cycle, I can get behind that shit.
Well, as your hair is flying in your face in a dark room and you're probably five or six beers deep, like you don't really care as much, as opposed to like we were just having a coffee with some dude pretending to be a vampire serving you with his fake teeth. Someone could look in the window and identify you and be like, I saw you in there.
I imagine it sounds similar to like in Japan. They have the maid cafes, got the same thing, noise about the vampires and shit.
They have the what cafes?
Maid cafes.
Maid?
Is this a sex thing? It usually is.
I mean, it kind of is. Yeah, it's a maid cafe. You go there, there's a person maid that serves you. You order food and drinks and shit. You get like a full experience.
The full experience.
It's a thing. Yeah, I'm sure you can't earn enough money to get full experience, but yeah, no, it's a thing. But no one knows, so I'll shut the fuck up. So apparently, the person knows about this. So.
The Japanese man, next level.
Never stop.
Speaking of that, yourselves.
Well, hold on though. But we're talking
baby
about
metal.
Theme stuff.
Baby yeah, metal.
You beat me to it. I was literally just going to say baby metal. All right.
Like obviously, they have a huge fan base, but I think that goes way too far. Like I can't listen to it. It like. Nails on a chalkboard.
Pretty much. Back to Alestorm. Okay, about being characters themselves. Their last year was called Seventh Rum, of the Seventh Rum, the Seventh Son of the Seventh Son. You know,
that's great. That's great. That's clever. I like that.
I guess so. So it's all the drinking pirates you fucking do, but you know.
I mean, other theme bands though, Duel. You said you made up one, but I thought of one because they've been tuned around here. But Max Sabbath, right?
I played with them. Yeah. Yeah. Also, like, they are
the guy from Green Jello, I think, started Max Sabbath or something like that.
Like that's a band that like shouldn't exist. Like one album, one tour, okay, haha. But like they have multiple albums. I don't know how there's a market for this band. Like, I guess there's always room for someone who wants to see Ozzy Osbourne dressed up as Ronald McDonald, but like
Zach Sabbath.
I don't know. This is gonna draw some ire from a few folks of the listeners, but I mean, there's clearly an audience for high camp based on how popular drag shows are, and I wonder if some of that bleeds over into, you know, this.
Twisted like Sister. What we're talking
about. Twisted Sister. Yeah,
yeah. Pretty much most hair metal in general is all like dyes it dolled up, like hair, making the whole nine fucking yards. It's all thing in the '80s.
Yeah, you guys seen Nitro and Cinderella?
The Dokken, Motley Crue, all that shit. So Cinderella.
Cinderella's an underrated group.
No, they are. No, Cinderella's straight up. They wrote some killer songs.
This is what peak male performance looks like.
Pretty Boy Floyd. You know, yeah, all that shit. Yeah, it's a good old thing.
Well, it's funny you say peak male performance because in some ways, bringing this all the way back to Austrian Death Machine, that is what they were trying to personify.
Right? How the cultural standards shift through the decades. Man, just trying to find his true self and his true reflection in the mirror through the decades. Obviously, I think there's an elephant in the room here with me being a huge black metal fan. Like
image over substance. A lot of that shit's in black
metal. Did Dissections like fucking go a little too far into the concept when they were stabbing gay men in the park and writing manifesto?
They shot him, actually.
That's right.
Yeah, shot him. Yeah, yeah. Though there's disagreements on who did it and who helped. But
yeah, Vlad said
it,
he did it, and Jan said no, he did it.
Yes.
Hey, pointed fingers. You.
And the 11-headed black dragon of Kata said no, we did it, guys.
There actually was a very large fellow at the show last night that had a Rian Chaos shirt on last night. He had dreads. He looked very unkempt. Probably smelled it getting near him, but I didn't want to.
With the black dragon on it.
No, he had the Rian Chaos Dissection shirt on, actually, so close enough.
It's got the 11-headed or the 11-sided pentagram star, or whatever it is, the album cover.
Is that a shirt?
I was going to say, there's an all-over print of the Black Dragon from Rian Chaos that I bought from
Nergal.
I bought it from Nergal last week. His Vintage Hell Instagram page. Check it out.
I didn't know. I think I've seen it. I'll check that out. Hell yeah.
And yeah, pissed me off. He was like, it's a medium, but it could be a large. I'm like, okay, I get it. It's like it's a fucking girl's medium. I had to give it to Nicole. I was just like, okay,
you whore.
I look like an 80s football player belly button showing. It's just like, okay,
that 70s shorts that my preacher jokes hanging out.
yeah, it was sad. It was a sick shirt, and she doesn't even know how awesome it is, but whatever. Anyway, anything else, any other bands that went too far? Like, where's the line for you? That's something we haven't established yet.
I guess to
is
me,
there a line? I love Beast of Black. I'm not sure there is a line.
Yeah, that's cheese, like shooting out of the speakers. Like, I love Stryper. Hell is my favorite, probably records ever. Like, it's Christian heavy metal, hair metal. It's fucking, it's cheesy as fuck. I'm not denying that, but God, it's great. Dokken. That shit's great. It's cheesy as a motherfucker, but God damn, it's some great metal, dude.
I like Unleash the Archers, but Blind Guardian, yes, I've always had a hard time getting into. Like, I think, again, it's pretty subjective is what I said. I don't know.
Is it the Oily Pex? Tell me the Oily Pex.
It could be the Tot Oily Pex. Yes.
Peak male performance.
Absolutely, sir. More ways than one. At the end of the day, I think we can all agree there is different strokes for different folks when it comes to the level of cheese that can be withstood, your threshold for coininess or a thematic element when it comes to a metal band. I think as long as there is some tangible sense of musical ability underneath it all, I'll accept it. Beast in Black, absolutely fucking love it. Even Man of War. I'm like, okay, yeah, fine. Even if didn't one guy just go to jail for what was it, child pornography? We don't.
A former bass player. Yeah, he got caught with some CP. Yeah.
Shit happens. Apparently, or bands like Windrose taking it back to Mordor Metal Monthly, not to associate them with CP or anything like that. They're just
not at all. No, there's two separate concepts, two separate ideas.
I mean, you could even say like something like Mayhem or like half of these black metal bands that are running around, like the same band, denim vest in a hood.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to try and say that Watane is not like a theme band, then I think you would be incorrect.
They're serious Satanists, dude. What the fuck you talk about, Pete? They're the real deal.
The agony and ecstasy of Watane.
It's so funny when you think that band that takes themselves so seriously is still under the same genre, albeit a different subgenre, as Oakley Dokley, the Ned Flanders theme.
The metalcore band. Yeah. That's trash. Actually, I grew specifically.
Is that too far? Where they exist for the meme of it, essentially?
Max Sabbath is, but people like that for some reason. I don't quite get it myself, to be honest.
Well, I think Max Sabbath is even that much more egregious because they are essentially a cover band with a shitty gimmick.
No, I remember specifically.
Kind of like Christian music here now, right?
Yeah.
A band with a shitty theme.
Yeah.
I can remember when I came to last year's here, Primordial Sacrament, there was this band. There were three like local Canadian openers in this one band. Like, it was black metal, but it was to a T style over substance. Like, the corpse was the point of like clownery. And there's like a guy, a shorter dude, who was like in like, oh, it looked like slave attire. Like, he had like the shackle things, he had like the white cloth over his junk and shit. He's doing this growl. He's just like, what the fuck? I had to stop. After the song, I had to go get something to eat. It was that fucking bad. Like, I'm done with this shit. It was, fuck them. Like, I'm stopping.
I can't think of a better way to end this conversation with the word of Richard Donahue, which is Windrose. We all give thumbs up. Yes.
Fuck yes.
Thumbs up. Yeah, Windrose rules.
Got that catalog. Yes. Fuck yeah, Windrose rules.
5 rings of power out of 5. Speaking of rings of power, their track of War and Sorrow, the opening track from Warforge or whatever, Warfront, I'm sorry, totally should be the actual theme song to Rings of Power. And it would be the best thing about that show. Low bar, I know, but it still would be the best thing about that show. Before we get out of here, I thought it would be fun if we came up with our own themed metal bands. Cheese Encouraged.
Sorry, go for it, Joel. I was going to say, I actually thought of a couple that I had already created in my mind during this episode. So,
well, we created one during the pandemic together. Do you not remember? We were talking about there's Johnny Paycheck and Johnny Cash. So we obviously have, we've got John Boy Crypto and the Rug Pools.
What? I must have missed this.
We'll put out NFTs of the album so everyone knows that you own it. Yeah. But there's no physical copy, you know, but everyone can just download it for free. But you own the NFT, which you paid more for, obviously. And then I also have the Great Depression, funeral doom themed band where everyone dresses up as stockbrokers and they throw bonds and stocks out into the crowd all the time. Okay. We'll just have a giant screen in the background that just shows the stock market crashing. Perfect.
This is going to be hard to describe on the air. But there's a typeface called Accidents Grotesque. I think it's Dutch, and it's spelled totally funny. And it's a precursor to the very famous typeface Helvetica. And so
this is graphic design pornography being described right now.
So I always said that Accidents Grotesque would be a great name for a graphic design themed death metal band. I don't know how that would play out. But I could try and ruminate on that one. And then additionally, I stealing this one a little bit from one of my former college instructors said that they wanted to start a punk band called One More Round. And it was also about being a designer because the clients are always requesting one more round of revisions, but it's also an allusion to taking one more round of shots as well. So
very punk. I can get with
it. A little career related humor there.
Donahue.
Also, big shoes to fill.
We all know you listen to John Boy Crypto and the Rug Pools. Come on.
Grindcore. I definitely would.
I remember when Eric Reif died and we said we wanted to try and buy Death's like intellectual property rights and turn it into NFT and call it Chuck Coin.
Still a golden idea. Still.
It wouldn't make much money, but it would be, I don't know, something that they would write in my obituary. Do you know what I mean? Like
founder of Chuck Coin, co-founder of Chuck Coin, Peter Buck.
I mean, pretty much pull the plug and got in relapse as fucking dug all they could out of fucking Chuck Schiller. God damn, they have mined that ore to nothingness at this point.
I mean, I don't know why
they've diggy-diggied that hole about as far as it can go.
Oh yes, as far as they fucking can, it's done. It is done. This family's set for life. Real
maybe it's because they actually have to play with people who knew these people and loved them, but why there isn't a metal band of people playing zombified versions of deceased metal icons isn't the thing. I don't know.
I mean, there was
some guy cosplaying as like zombie Dimebag Daryl. There's like a zombified Bon Scott on stage.
Zombified
Peter Steele.
Ooh. Kurt Cobain's on stage, but his head's not there.
His head was still intact. It was just a little messy in the back.
Don of the Black Mark. Black Marks. The one with old
Don of the Black Marks with Dead.
Yeah. Good ideas here, boys.
Only mildly in poor taste. Only mildly. So, anything else we want to talk about, guys? Or I think we've done it. I think Bog sent a message slyly in the chat that we eclipsed the 2-hour mark about 15 minutes ago.
This is his return, though. It's just going to be a little epic, a little longer, a little more context. People love Pete. Hell, I miss Pete being regularly on Pass Real Talk, brother. I do miss you, man.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate that.
It's so fun, but you had an extra oomph.
Well, you just have an extra mind to bounce off of. Just that much more snark added in. That extra R of elitism just is key to the formula, you know. But I don't have anything else to actually say, at least nothing else that the listeners actually want to fucking listen to. So without further ado, thank you very much for listening to this edition of the Fundamentalist Podcast. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Tell Pete you loved having him back. And
yeah.
I don't know, fucker. Are we gonna have you back for the end of the year, albums of the year pod, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, cool.
This is the sixth year consecutively. I guess I can't skip at this point. I'm trying to make
this will be my third year. Do you want
to join the black metal pod as well, or just the albums of the year?
Let's keep that TBD. But just let me know. Just add me to the thread so I can see what's going on. If I feel like I can get it together and I'm feeling up to it, I'd love to join. And if I don't, then maybe I won't. So
well, he does have a PlayStation 5 now to keep him busy, so maybe he's going to be occupied. It could happen. Richard, thank you for joining as always.
Of course.
And I'm your host, Dual Guest. Thank you so much for listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast. Let us know what you thought of this episode on Spotify, or you can send us some music that you want us to review, as someone already did this last week, which we'll show you on the next episode. If you have any opinions on what we talked about, you can send it to us at thefundamentalistpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Speaking of which, and I should have mentioned this actually at the very beginning of the episode, but we got this great feedback from a user named Ichabod Wolfram Gustafson saying, I'm loving the sidekick with the stuffy nose. He sounds like Arthur on the Tick, referring to our very own Richard Donahue, which hastily put together shoddy to the nth degree Photoshop job of Arthur with Richard's lower face, shall we say, was put together, and I'm very proud of it.
A cigarette. yes.
Absolutely. See, just let us know what you think. Bring the heat if necessary. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.